The other voice you hear on the air here is Mark Robinson. Mark has written a book called Smoke, Fire, and Angels, and it is the story of that tragic day on Avon Mountain. And the kind of the prelude and the stories behind those people who were there at that time. The story of what happened to the people after. And by the way, you were there, were you not?
Yeah, I was in the front row. So there was nothing between me and the truck. And the thing is, I don't remember anything about it. I went to work that day and woke up in the emergency room and literally asked the doctor what happened.
Did you got a Lifestar ride, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you said you didn't even remember. You just kind of, you know, you think you remember some things, but not really.
Yeah, no, I really don't. I you know, occasionally get a little flash or a you know, feeling a deja vu, but I don't have any specific memories.
A lot of stories of, and the reason for the name of the book, of course, is the smoke, which was there once the dump truck mm-hmm. burst into flame. Fire, obviously. And angels, and those were the people who were there who just jumped out of their cars. For, and I remember the story of one woman who works over at St. Francis up there in Avon. She was on her way to work from Hartford going in there. Right. And right, she got out and just complete strangers. Is
doing people were unbelievable. They really, truly were angels. The actual inspiration for the title, though, was from Elena Tomasi, who was trapped in her yes. burning car. And she's a dentist from Belarus.
Amazing story.
Yeah, she's just a terrific lady. And she was in a daze. She had a head wound. She required 100 stitches later on. And so she was in and out of consciousness. But when Officer Todd Myers from West Hartford reached in to try to help her, she saw his white T-shirt. And she said later, I don't know why, but I started thinking about angels. What are angels doing in my car?
Yeah.
And that was the inspiration for the title. And it really is symbolic of the whole effort, what people did that day to help their fellow man.
So we learn a little bit about people who are just going about their normal lives, stopping off at Jerry's Place to have breakfast over there in Canton on 44. And
right.
hey, just getting on with things. And here you're sitting here in this at this one moment, everything in your life changes.
Yeah, I almost called the book Twists of Fate. There are so many stories of people who were just missed being there, who were there simply because they stopped for a cup of coffee or walked the dog or whatever. And those that morning turned out to be life and death decisions.
It's really interesting. And yeah, you're right. And one guy, didn't he stop for coffee down at the new Citgo station and,
right.
you know, decided, yeah, just a remarkable story. And then, so how did you put this all together? Did you talk to people who were involved? Did you talk to their families? Yeah. You did a lot of work on this book.
Yeah, well, originally I thought I'd have the book out by the first anniversary of the crash, so I was 3 years late on my own personal deadline because it took a long time to gather all the information. I really didn't realize what I was getting into. I had to get the trust of the families, I think, because I was in the crash myself, that they were willing to work with me. I wanted to be very careful to tell their stories the right way for them. So there was that. The legal process takes a long time to work its way through. So that was a big factor. And, you know, I didn't realize just the difficulty in writing a book and how the discipline it would take to do that. So
what did this do to you, having been in the accident? Was this, I don't want to say therapeutic, but what did you get out of it?
Well, writing the book was in some form therapeutic in the sense that I got a better understanding what happened. But there are simply questions that this crash raised that I don't think have answers. They're just things that happen to us. How do you explain Chip Stotler, a 42-year-old guy? Everybody adored Chip, has five beautiful little girls, did so much good in this world, and how do you explain how he lost his life that day?
I think also, I think, you know, obviously we would look at this as good guys and bad guys. David Wilcox, obviously a bad guy. And you get into the text messages. I mean, you got access to some pretty good information. I mean, as far as the texting between Donna and her husband and, you know, the gall she had to call the insurance company and say, we'd like to reinstate. Now, when did she get around to telling the insurance company that there had actually been an accident before she tried to reinstate?
About 2 hours after the crash. But she had been in contact with her husband, David Wilcox, many times that morning. They started in right away. The number of calls between those two was absolutely amazing. David Wilcox apparently was in pretty close proximity to the crash scene. So when you talk to some of the families who lost loved ones, you can imagine what it feels like to know that their loved one was trapped in a car. And here's this guy orchestrating insurance fraud and all sorts of other terrible things, destroying evidence, telling his son to destroy evidence. So you can imagine how the families who lost loved ones feel about that.
I think one of the points that you made here, but see, I think you were fair to him. I don't think you just told the story.
Yeah.
The company, though, and by the way, I had no idea that truck was only about 8 years old or seven years. It was a fairly new truck.
It was. This is a guy who had a long track record, though. He had
DOT.
Right. 1,136 violations. So a long track record of that of just not running his business in a responsible way. Yet at the same time, he had all those violations. You think the state would run him out of business, but not only did they not run him out of business, they gave him $1.6 million worth of business.
Can you stick around, Mark?
Yes.
Do you have to go to work like
no,
right
I
away?
Got a few minutes, sure.
Okay, Mark Robinson is here. I want to do a little more on this because, seriously, guys, it's a great book. And there's, in addition to being really well done, I think there's also another reason to buy it. And so we'll talk about something you're trying to get done.
Thanks.
All right, thanks. It's by the way, the name of the book is Smoke, Fire, and Angels by Mark Robinson. Right, 841 on WTIC. We're going to keep Mark around here for a while. Mark Robinson is the author of Smoke, Fire, and Angels, a fascinating piece of work. How long did it take you to do this?
Four years.
A lot of interviews.
Yeah, probably up to about 100 people.
I want to get, because one of the things that we were always asking about this is, and don't get the idea that this is a dry treatise. This is a story of people, heroes. It's a great story, a tragic story, but a great story, and so on and so forth. But the one thing that I think a lot of people, and let's go back to David Wilcox, and his, now he'd actually had to change the name of the company, right?
Yeah, he did actually get run out of business. He had a previous company called Wilcox Trucking, and at some point the state said enough with the safety inspections, and he just simply changed the name to American Crushing and Recycling. Same location, same trucks, same everything. He did buy some new equipment, but you know, it's almost funny when you look at it because he just kept going.
Let's go back to that previous company. I mean, and you're saying that he was having trucks basically pulled over, taken off the road.
Oh yeah,
quite frequently, correct?
He had out of his 1,100 safety violations, 223 were out of service, meaning the violation was so serious they had to yank the truck immediately.
Whoa. So the question I guess you ask is, you know, with that kind of record, how did he stay in business the second time?
There are questions, again, that don't have answers. I don't have a good answer to that question. There are a number of things that, again, I think the state could have done. You could argue that because of all those violations, he should have been run out of business in a much more definitive way so that he could not have reemerged with just a different company name. So there was that. There was the 1993 legislation that did a good thing. The intent was to get uninsured motorists off the road, which is good. So the inexplicable part of that is that they created a loophole for commercial entities. So if you, Ray Dunaway, had not paid your insurance or canceled it, DMV would have been all over you. Mm-hmm. If you're David Wilcox, no such scrutiny. There's an explicit loophole written in for commercial entities. No explanation for why that was done. All members of that 1993 legislative class voted to approve that, including Governor Rell.
What, do they see this as being business friendly or something?
I think that's part of it. I think there is an argument as far as, you know, you run a seasonal business just like you don't want to insure your boat during the winter. But to allow that kind of latitude for a guy who has such a bad track record, and again, not come up with a satisfactory explanation as to why he did it. Attorney General Blumenthal said there is no good reason why that should have happened. And they did close the loophole within weeks after the crash.
You do, yeah, after this.
Right.
And by the way, the other thing I thought was, well, there are a lot of things that are interesting in this book, but the fact is, I didn't realize there'd been that many trucks going out of control over Avon Mountain.
Right. The crash that I was in July of 2005 was the seventh truck in 21 years to lose its brakes going down that mountain. The truck that crashed into Nassau's 2 years later, eighth truck in 23 years. So there's a long history on that mountain. And again, you got to wonder, why did it take all that destruction before the state moved in and put in the runaway ramp and started the other improvements?
We need to take a break, but can you stay for a minute? Or
sure.
Okay. Because I want to get into that law a bit. Because you did talk to at least one legislator, did you not? Did you not?
I talked to several, and I did get one gentleman did try to help me.
All right. Let's take a break, and we'll come back. The name of the book, and I especially want to tell you, you know, in addition to the facts, it's a great book. But I think also, you know, there's a good reason for this, and we'll talk about one of the reasons you're doing this.
Right.
Mark Robinson is the author. The name of the book is Smoke, Fire, and Angels. Back in a minute, 8:45. Morning, I'm Ray Dunaway. A couple of minutes here. I decided to keep – this is a good book. And I want to tell you, first of all, one of the things that Mark did, and by the way, Mark Robinson is our guest, Smoke, Fire, and Angels, the name of the book, the story of the crash at Avon Mountain. There is yet another reason in the fact that it's – I will tell you, just I read it yesterday afternoon, and it was – number one, the number of people that I know that are in this book is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And the other reason is that I think you need to think about something that's really kind of fascinating, and that is you're doing this for a cause.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think about within seconds after the slab of concrete crashed through my windshield, 21-year-old Kyle Caruso came running down from Avon Old Farms Hotel to help me and put himself in harm's way. That bus, which was just behind my car, was still in gear. There was
Kelly
smoke and
Transit.
Fire. The Kelly Transit bus, right? So Kyle took an amazing risk just to help me, and he never sent me a bill. None of those rescues there were there for their own personal gain. They were there to help their fellow man. So when I understood what happened, I thought, what can I do to pay it forward? And that's an attempt to do this. And also, there's a great financial need here from the families who lost loved ones that day. So we're trying to help along those lines as well.
By the way, I don't know. Can I tell what you need to have done, though, on the 8,000 or whatever it is to organize this thing in the 501c3, or do you want me to not talk about that?
We're making progress along that lines, but just...
Well, maybe I get a pro bono lawyer or something.
Yeah, and someone has stepped up, and I'm cautiously optimistic it's going to work out.
God bless him. All right, but let's go back to that. You wrote this book because, number one, Wilcox had nothing. I mean, he had nothing. Mm-hmm. The driver, I mean, to me, it's a poignant story. I think this is a guy who was messed up, Raheem, right?
Raheem Nafi. Raheem. Yeah.
You know, this is a guy who had made obvious mistakes, mm-hmm. but the guy was trying to get himself back together.
Right.
And with Wilcox, you go into work, you don't like the truck. Hey, take off, buddy. I don't need you.
Yeah.
The other thing that's weird is the reason that Raheem ended up in that truck was because he was delayed getting to work. And so that was the truck 8 was the only one that was left.
Yeah, that was the only truck left in the yard. So when he got there, Detective Pittman dropped him off. And as Detective Pittman told me later on, that was it. Wilcox was standing there glaring. And, you know, Raheem, at that point, truck drivers are required to do an inspection, to walk around the truck carefully, test a whole bunch of things. I just doubt that morning, given that he was a few minutes late and the look on Mr. Wilcox's face that Raheem was going to do a rigorous inspection that morning. So,
and the other thing that's interesting is you know, I didn't know that I'd known this. I don't think I did. But the fact was he was going to be turning left on Deer Cliff. That's where he was going to go. So he'd probably never been on that side of the mountain.
No.
He missed the turn.
Yes, but the day before in a different truck, he had, according to his own lawyer, he had made 20 trips to the place he was going the day of the crash. So he knew what he was doing. But the fact is, the brakes on that truck did not work. That's why I think he missed the turn.
So all of a sudden, he finds himself going down the mountain, and he didn't have any idea what's ahead. You got right. The warning signs, you know, sharp curves and stuff, but
right.
Forget it.
I suspect he thought he could just go to the next intersection and turn it around.
All right, the question that we have, and one of your points here, is that, you know, yeah, a lot of people say, yeah, you're right, sue the state, go for the deepest pockets. But the fact of the matter is, we're talking about the 93 law. We're mm-hmm. talking about not sufficient inspections of trucks. And I mean, I remember this when I got back, you know, I was gone when I was on vacation. Mm-hmm. I came back and I heard the story from Dana. Mm-hmm. Well, whoa. Anyway, but every time I saw a dump truck now, yeah, I'm scared to death, mm-hmm. you know, because you don't you realize how big they are.
Right.
And if they don't have brakes or clutches or any of that, it's going to be a problem.
Right.
Anyway, the point you're making here is the state does bear some responsibility, in your opinion.
Right. And if you talk to the lawyers, they'll tell you there's something called sole proximate cause, which means, in layman's terms, I think it means you're screwed. Because if you're dealing with the state, you have to prove that the state is 100% responsible. And clearly, Wilcox bears a huge portion of the responsibility as well. But why was he even on the road that day? Why was he even in business? So, and I think the state's responsible for that. I think the state's responsible for the condition of the road. So, you know, when you look at it from the legislation standpoint, the condition of the road standpoint, and Wilcox's safety record, for those three reasons, I think the state bears a huge portion of the responsibility. They should step up and help these families who lost loved ones that day.
And we knew, as I learned from the book, I mean, people, I couldn't get it. I live in Avon. We used to be downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody go, oh, God, you've got to go over the mountain every morning. And I go, it's no big deal. Of course, I'm doing it at 4, you know, 4:15 or 4:30.
Right.
But you know, it was never a big deal to me.
Right.
But I really wasn't aware how many accidents there are up there. That road is dangerous.
Yeah, no, the statistics are enormous. And you know, there are many people have lost their lives on the mountain, on the part of the road that traverses the mountain. The whole thing about trucks losing their brakes coming down, that's a whole different story in a way, because you know, they're coming screaming down the mountain on that side, and that's just a situation where
Well, you know, I got to tell you, Mark, I go to Colorado once in a while.
Yeah.
And you're up in the Rockies, and the most you're going to see is an 8% grade.
Yeah.
This is a 10% grade.
Right.
And I had that trucker guy on after the guy went into Nassau.
Right.
And he was saying, you know, I said, well, there's a rule of thumb. I think you kind of mentioned that.
Right.
But, you know, 10% is almost impassable for a truck anyway, even with brakes.
I read his book after I heard
you. Pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, Philip Wilson. Yeah, good guy. And it was very interesting. And he said, essentially, if I remember correctly, he said he wouldn't be going down.
I wouldn't have done it. So, okay. And the reason, just last question, that 93 law, what did you talk to a couple legislators? Some of them said, here's the reason.
Yeah, well,
we exempted from liability insurance.
Retired Senator DeLuca was actually most helpful. He had the courtesy to respond to me and try to help me understand what happened that day. He was a member of the insurance committee back then, and I really appreciate his help. But he basically said it was, you know, a concession to the construction industry. But, you know, it's not good enough to give that kind of latitude to operators out there. Most of them operate their businesses very safely and responsibly. Yeah. But there's always going to be a Wilcox out there who tries to take advantage, and that's what happened.
Well, Mark, this is great work. Mark Robinson, you can buy the book where?
Borders in Simsbury is one place, and SmokeFireAndAngels.com is another place.
Okay, it's a great book. Nice piece of work.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed reading it.
Thanks, Ray.
Really well done. 857 WTIC. Once again, Mark Robinson, Smoke, Fire, and Angels.